This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And ladies, today we're going to start with you. Because in the Massachusetts gubernatorial race, much of the focus is on you. As Democrat Martha Coakley and Republican Charlie Baker are fighting to win over Massachusetts female voters.
Today, Coakley was in Brighton visiting the Crittenden Women's Union, an advocacy group for low-income women and their families. At the same time, Baker fired off a press release urging Coakley to support boosting the earned income tax credit to aid single moms.
So the battle for female voters is intensifying because the gender gap between the candidates is shrinking. Last week, a WBUR tracking poll gave Coakley a 24-point lead among women. But this week, that lead dropped by 9 points. Overall, Coakley maintains a slim 3-point edge over Charlie Baker, 44 to 41. So we're going to take a look at the importance of the female vote to both candidates, and let's do so by beginning with Victoria Budson. She's executive director of the Women and Public Policy Program at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Victoria Budson, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Meghna. Lovely to talk with you.
Always great to have you. So first of all, let me just ask for your just brief impressions on what you make of this 1 week, almost 10-point drop in the number of women supporting Martha Coakley that we've seen in these two WBUR tracking polls.
Well, what's interesting is the real story is that the candidates have got it right, that the focus on women voters is where their attention needs to be. And the second piece that's important to stay focused on is Martha Coakley still has a huge gender gap in her favor with 15 points, still solidly voting for her among women voters. And then what people haven't been talking about is we still have 11% of undecided voters.
Uh-huh.
And the majority of undecided voters, the vast majority, tend to be women who are making that decision later than their male counterparts. So when you see the candidates focusing their attention on issues of concern to women, their campaigns understand that, and they're keeping their eye on the ball.
Okay, so we're going to talk in a minute about why women or female voters in Massachusetts are so particularly important in this state. But to one of your points, I mean, I feel as if up until recently in the campaign overall, there's been a somewhat simplistic presumption that because Martha Coakley is both a woman and a Democrat, she is going to capture the majority of the female vote. I mean, does this slip in the polls, even with the 15-point lead that she still has? Does it call into question that presumption?
Well, the presumption is a misunderstanding from the get-go. Women voters are often seen as an interest group, as a minority. And you have to understand that when you look across the nation, in every presidential election since 1980, there has been a significant gender gap with women voting for the Democrat more than their male counterparts. You know, in 2012, that's 10 points. In the prior two presidential elections, it's 7 points. But women aren't an interest group. Women are the majority of citizens in Massachusetts, and they're the majority of voters. And not by a bit. There's more than 250,000 more female voters than their male counterparts.
A quarter million. Okay. And I presume that there's even in a blue state like Massachusetts, there's quite a bit of diversity amongst those women.
That's absolutely right. And the more women of color, the higher the gap. Women of color much more significantly create a gender gap in favor of the Democratic candidate.
Mm. So, I'm sorry, Victoria, but on that point, so in Massachusetts in particular, I mean, how should Martha Coakley,
sure,
and Charlie Baker go about trying to win over these female voters? Because, I mean, is it as simple as talking about quote-unquote so-called, you know, women's issues? Or does
No.
that not work here?
That does not work. We have the most highly educated population of women within the U.S., the highest number of high school, college, and postgraduate degrees. And women voters vote their interests. And their key bread-and-butter interests are jobs, the economy, healthcare, and education. So you can certainly lose ground with women by making errors or gaffes that show you don't understand their issues, but when you think about what their issues are, it's the economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's jobs. Women are very practical. They are the people who are sitting down across the kitchen table with or without others in their family to figure out how they're going to make it work.
Mm.
And when you look at a city like Boston, for example, majority female. The majority of households are headed by females.
Wow.
Yeah. So candidates have to focus in on these practical day-to-day issues. Now, in addition, every candidate, male or female, And then every elected leader, when they think about what their policies are, what their platform is, what the vision statement is for the time they're in office, it's got to begin with the needs of women, because women are the majority of their citizens.
Right. Well, let me ask you finally, because we're going to talk about Charlie Baker in a minute with someone following his campaign. Mm. But getting back to Martha Coakley here, I take your point about talking about the issues, talking about the economy, about mm-hmm. jobs, about supporting families is the most direct way to appeal to the interests of this all-important female vote.
That's right.
But what about for Martha Coakley? Does she have an advantage by saying, oh, and yes, I too am a woman, so I understand how you feel? Or is that sort of kind of a non-issue, given the vast importance of how big the female vote is here?
Right, right. So candidates have a choice, and they can decide that they're going to identify with whatever the women's vote is within the 11% who are undecided. Because remember, the candidate's job right now isn't to speak to every woman. They need to speak to those women who have not yet made up their mind, and if they think they can do it, they need to sway voters. So then they have to segment which women have not decided. Mm. And usually what we see is single female head of household women tend to be the latest breaking voter. What are the issues for that demographic? And those tend to focus highly on economic issues. They may also focus on whether or not there's paid leave and sick time and things which a single female head of household has to figure out in her day-to-day life in order to make ends meet for her family.
Right. And as you noted, they're often late-breaking voters, so we've got quite a ways to go before November.
Yes, we do.
Well, Victoria Budson is Executive Director of the Women in Public Policy Program at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Always great to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Well, let's turn now to Charlie Baker's campaign. Jim O'Sullivan is political reporter for The Globe and politics editor at Boston.com. Jim, great to have you back.
Hi, Magnum. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about how Charlie Baker might see this 9-point drop in support amongst women for Martha Coakley. I mean, Victoria Budson just pointed out that Coakley still has, according to WBUR's tracking poll, a 15-point lead. But there, you know, that lead has shrunk. Is that significant for the Baker camp?
Well, I think you're just looking at 2 weeks' worth of data. So if you're Baker and wanting to derive any sort of glee from that, you probably want a bigger sample size. And if you're Coakley's camp and looking to derive any solace, you're probably okay with it. But it is important to note that in 2010, you know, a post-election poll showed that he lost women to Deval Patrick by, I think it was 24 points.
Mm-hmm.
So and if he can shave that off and increase his share of the female vote, I think you'll see a happy Baker.
Did you see, I mean, maybe you just answered my question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Did we see Charlie Baker in his 2010 run for governor think as pointedly about how to win over female voters in 2010 as he is now?
I think he learned a lot of lessons from 2010. I think he'd be pretty honest with you about that. And one of those was that sort of candidate, that sort of hard-edged, had enough, his slogan that year was had enough candidate, turns off a significant voting block, and not just among female voters. People were able to identify with the governor better that year. People liked the governor's sort of upbeat, optimistic message more that year. And I think that's part of why you see Baker this year running a sharply different campaign.
Hmm. Well, in fact, you wrote about this in today's Globe, that not only in the tone of his campaign, but maybe even in the actual policy prescriptions
right.
that he's putting forward. I mean, you write that he has changed from his positions on what used to be his 5-5-5 tax plan from 2010, which was a 5% tax rate on sales, income, and business. He seems to be walking away from that now.
Right. He's changed his plan. And the reason specifically on that one, the campaign says, well, it's a different economic environment. But I'd also say that we're dealing with a significantly different political environment than we dealt with in 2010. Remember, Scott Brown had just gotten elected. People were still trying to figure out, what is the Tea Party? How big is the Tea Party? How much is the Tea Party a factor in Massachusetts? And Baker was sort of on uncertain footing. You know, how do you run as a Republican in Massachusetts against an incumbent Democratic governor? This time he's not running against an incumbent. You watch him be very careful in discussing Deval Patrick. He almost never criticizes the governor by name, realizing that the governor is still fairly personally popular, despite some people not being in love with his management job. The management job the governor's done, he's still enormously personally popular. And even when the governor came out today and criticized Baker, fairly sharply in our piece. The Baker folks declined to respond directly to that.
Interesting.
So you've seen Baker shift not just in policy and tone, but also in recognizing the environment around him is different.
Okay. Well, on that point, we actually caught up, WBUR caught up with Charlie Baker this morning, and here's how he responded to questions about why he is shifting his position away from his own tax plan and also, as you said, about tone and approach in this campaign.
Well, I think any leader factors the environment into the decisions they make with respect to their policies and their positions, and as more information becomes available, you should always be willing to reconsider positions you take on pretty much anything. That's how great leaders manage through difficult times and adapt to change.
Jim, though, I'm wondering how much can we really determine, how deeply authentic this change is to Charlie Baker? Because in your story in the Globe today, you reported that his campaign is actively trying to construct a fresh image. It was interesting to see how his aides refer to it as good Charlie over the 2010 Charlie Baker. And in the October issue of Boston Magazine, the one just out, there's a big article titled Charlie Baker 2.0 that has the subtitle, "The warmest, nicest, friendliest, most amicable gubernatorial candidate you'll ever meet, but who won't give a straight answer to a single question." So how much of this makeover is genuine or designed to court all those voters, as you were saying, that he just turned off in 2010?
Well, that's sort of the interesting tension, right, is how do you walk that balance between appealing to those voters who you didn't get in 2010 who might be open to voting for you if you just tweaked a couple things here and there, be it tone or style, or you don't wear a necktie as much, or you're a little bit different on climate change, and how do you avoid losing people who really like to see a candidate they know is sincere at all times and authentic at all times and real? So that's sort of one of the fundamental, I think, underlying dynamics in this campaign.
Well, Jim O'Sullivan is political reporter for the Boston Globe and politics editor at Boston.com. Always great to have you, Jim. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much.
And stay with us. Coming up, what it means to be old, 38 years old. Bill Littlefield on how age catches up with even the best in the NFL. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.